Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Nothing Concrete, the Barbican podcast. I'm Benesh Maid, and on this week's archive edition, our focus turns once again to the cinema as we re-listen to an honest and engaging conversation with director Lynn Ramsey. For over two decades, director Lynn Ramsey has blazed a path in her films, from her debut, 1999's Ratcatcher, to the subject of this interview, 2017's dark and intense You Were Never Really Here.
You know, there's no money, there's not the time running out. It's always like this kind of crazy energy, and I think sometimes that just brings out the best ideas for me. I don't think I've ever not walked into a film slightly terrified, and I think you should be slightly terrified.
Lynn Ramsey has worked and brought us outstanding performances from the likes of Tilda Swinton in We Need to Talk About Kevin, Samantha Morton in Morven Calla, and the subject of this podcast, Joaquin Phoenix and his intense hitman in You Were Never Really Here.
What's the lead?
Senator Albert Vato.
His daughter's missing.
Her name is Nina.
Don't worry, I'll get her.
We started by talking about Joaquin's character of Jo and the novella that she drew upon for the film. On a slightly crackly phone line from LA, I spoke to the director. We spend our time in your films connecting on a very intimate level with one or two characters. So when talking about the new film, what connected you to the character of Jo? Why could you bring him from the book to the screen?
He's a kind of broken man in a way, you know, like he's like the walking dead. And I think the fact he lived with his mum and he wasn't like the sort of cliche of that trope, you know, like he's suffering post-traumatic stress and he just totally fills the mission in a way. Like there's no blacks, there's no whites, it's like a rabbit hole. So first and foremost, there's things in the book that I liked, but then I just sort of ran with it and kind of made it my own because it's quite a short novella. And Joaquin came about 6 or 7 weeks before, so we're continuing sort of developing that character. I mean, maybe I thought I was making an action movie, but I was actually making a character study, you know? Like, I always kind of gravitate towards the character. And he was just a fascinating guy with quite a kind of crazy past. And it's a kind of Lazarus film as well. I think it was about this guy coming back to life in some way, rather than it being, you know, super dark the way some people interpret it.
I don't know how much you've thought about this. You've adapted, I think, 3 books so far. What attracts you to kind of taking somebody else's words and ideas and then translating them? I mean, is it about freedom within what is written?
I don't think I've ever done a straight adaptation. They're always kind of jumping off points. I mean, to me, it's always just about good material, you know? Like, for instance, We Need to Talk About Kevin. I don't think this subject's been explored, you know? And it was a really interesting one. Well, if you don't love your kids, and then he, it's about a guy that's kind of falling apart, it seems. But it had a real propulsive kind of energy about it as well. I mean, you could sit and read the book and, like, how long this film is in 90 minutes. It was like a real page turner. So I wanted to keep that energy, you know. But I don't think I've ever done a straight adaptation because Morven Calla was like a first-person narrative and it's not at all in the film. So, I mean, that's just about ideas. I mean, right now I'm writing an original thing. But, you know, it's just a different process, you know. I don't have a set kind of thing where I'm definitely looking for a book adaptation. It's more about ideas, really, you know.
You have kids, Jo? Nina. Her name is Nina. I've heard of these places. Underage girls.
Senator, if she's there, I'll get her.
Cleary said you were brutal.
I can be.
when you work with actors who come with so much presence and command of the screen, such as Joaquin, is it about the conversations between the two of you?
Well, I mean, we spoke quite early on. I think he was really interested in working with me. I mean, before I started writing the script, I really thought it was him. I was like, before I even did scene one, he was on my screensaver. It was like, I think this guy is Joe. And because I find him really, he always brings a as well as having this amazing presence, that kind of complexity to the character. He didn't have a lot of time to shoot this film, it was like 29 days, so it was a lot of first takes, you know. But every take he did was different. Sometimes it was funny or terrifying, and we wanted to be really, but you never knew what to expect. And that makes Joe kind of more terrifying, just that never know what's really going to happen next. That was something I think we were quite aware of, just to push ourselves every day. A lot of actors don't show up that early, so just during that prep process, it was amazing, you know what I mean? Because, you know, it was like having a DP or someone, acting department, Joaquin Phoenix. You know, he was building up and becoming this kind of beast. You know, there was all the way he was walking, and it was just like to have that during that crazy time of prep was amazing. It was quite an organic process making that character, and I remember being in prep and it was pitch black and hearing all these fireworks. And it sounded like the world was coming to an end, and I recorded it in my phone and I gave it to him and I was like, this is what you hear every day. I was like, your head's full of broken glass. It just was a brilliant team, you know. It was just like, he just was like a fellow filmmaker, really. And we just, I think, picked apart anything in the script that felt too familiar or obvious, and it was a super exhilarating way for me to work, but also a really hot, intense summer, you know what I mean? But I think the kind of craziness of it all went into the movie a bit, you know?
That's really interesting. You know, I wanted to ask the question in regards to your films, how you have that sense of emotion and sense of that intensity, but it sounds like a lot of it is you, I don't know, taking the moments and running with it. Is that fair?
Yeah, I would, especially after I've had to do that stuff that's almost, like for instance, Kevin, I think it was a longer script and then there was a financial crash and I had to reimagine that, like, for a lot less money. So it was almost like edited on paper, you know what I mean? It was like, this scene goes to this scene, it was super complex. But I was like, I'm going to determine to make it. I think I've learned a lot about editing, you know? So I guess, like, the scripts are quite precise, but there's room for me always. I think you've got to be really aware in the moment if something better is happening. That's just something I've learned as a filmmaker, at least. Be aware in the present tense, you know? And in filmmaking, you've kind of got a gun to your head. You're like, you know, it's like, there's no money, there's no, the time's running out. It's always like this kind of crazy energy, and I think sometimes that just brings out the best ideas for me. You know, it's just like, it's almost instinctive. It's like you got to go with what feels right, you know? Like, and so, I don't know, I find in a film set, I know when I feel sure of my choices, you know, and I know when I don't feel sure, and I know there's something wrong if I don't feel sure. You act to a location, you know, like you can write the greatest scene, whatever, and then you go to the location and it tells you something else, and it's really claustrophobic, or it's got a different kind of vibe, informs the scene. So I think it's just always been, you know, like aware, and it's through the prep and the shoot, you know what I mean, the what's going on around you. And it's hard, sometimes that's hard to do when you're making a film. To me, that's really exciting, you know. Often a location will just change something. But generally, I try and, like, you know, right from Ratcatcher on, I think, I had a sketch in Ratcatcher that was all set in the summer, the hottest summer in Glasgow. The whole time it rained, we didn't have weather cover. the film was going to be this kind of, like, really subdued tone film, but it wasn't written like that. And I think you just have to, the film just kind of, the kind of craziness of it all went into the movie a bit, you know.
Would you consider this your most violent film that you've made? How do you judge the violence in this film? I mean, obviously talking about the hammer, that it's quite hard to watch at times.
But I think the last film was about violence as well, do you know what I mean? You know, it's like it's different forms, you know, like it's probably more, the audience could probably answer the question better than me, but there's a lot of off-screen violence. I was never kind of going to approach it in a way that was like super cool, you know, because it's not really a very cool guy. It was never that kind of approaching it from the glamorization point, even though people love that thrill, and you know, I love balletic scenes as much as the next, but we didn't really even have the time for big those kind of sequences. So it was always thinking about the psychology of the character in order to tell you the mise-en-scene, you know, like it was always like he's like a machine, like, so like the surveillance camera idea popped into my head because I'd half a day to shoot it. I knew I would never have to be able to do a big sequence like that. And so that brought a lot of kind of light bulb moments. And I did a test and I was like, wow, this is actually, you know, an interesting way to think about it, is to think of it as whole mechanical, then it becomes much more personal. And then it's almost post-rage. But I think it's just that the violence is handled in a different viewpoint, you know. I think that it scares people because there's a lot of unknown in it, you know. The fact that we didn't have that much prep time, actually there was a lot of prep done while I was writing, you know, so Tom was really up to speed with where I was going with it, and so was Johnny and Paul. So again, it's a reaction to the city and how I would deal with the sounds, you know, what's going on in his head. And yeah, I start those things really at script stage. I write sound in it, my scripts. I write that. And I wanted that the script, again, had emotion to it, that, this, you know, that was tight. And I felt it was that kind of film. Like, and I did, not every film's like that. Some films really need that space. But I felt this was fast and furious kind of thing. Maybe I just felt pissed off. I don't know.
I suppose there's the idea of whether he is a hero or a good man. Maybe the relationship with his mother is the thing that anchors him.
Well, that was certainly something I explored much more than it ever was in the novella. It was just touched upon, and I felt, to me, it was like a sort of bizarre, just kind of Harold and Maude relationship, you know, like it was just like, I felt that he loves it, you know, that there's this real tenderness, but she's elderly and he has to look after her, and that's frustrating. So I think in the book it's much more kind of, you know, I'd say like, you know, mother and son relationship, and that was certainly something we wanted to avoid that.
We want Jack and Jill. Hey, you're so kissable. Air is the love light in your eyes. M-N-O-P. I could go on all day.
Yes, you could.
You faced some big challenges in your filmmaking career, a lot of financial pressures and setbacks. Do you think you found your voice with this film? It sounds like it, or refound your voice.
I'm finding that my experience or something is just learning a lot of things, you know. I think you just learn so much. I still feel like a student. I don't feel like you learn something new every film you make, you know. And you should. I don't think I've ever not walked into a film slightly terrified, and I think you should be slightly terrified. You know, it almost feels life and death when you're making a film, which is ridiculous. But there's a sense of, like, you know, really making a film, you know, with some sort of precision as well, and some kind of, like, voice that isn't drowned out too many cooks, you know. Screenings during edits are quite important, you know what I mean? Even if it's, like, you know, you go through bumpy rides with every cut. Like, first cuts are always, like, the director always gets really depressed. You could probably ask most directors will say that, you know. It's like you get a rough cut and then you try to find this thing. But certainly, I mean, I think Jim Nelson, the producer, and one of the producers who was in London while we were cutting, and Joe Beanie, you know, and the editor and I, the edit was as crazy as shit. Normally it's a bit calmer, but it was like as fast. It felt fast, and then we were really sort of, the can thing came up, you know, the film wasn't ready. To me, it's like making films is a collaboration, but you still have to this, you know, at the end of the day, the buck's at a stop to me, so it's like, I think that works. But I will certainly, you know, involve people that I trust, you know, to look at the cuts and, you know, and make sure I feel like I'm going in the right direction. So it's a pretty collaborative process for me.
Does it surprise you when someone comes up to you and says how important the films you've made have been to them, or, you know, new directors? That must be, you know, flattering and inspiring.
It's funny because I think, you know, there's certainly, when you're making films, it's tough, and you can sometimes feel like, oh my God, this is so hard. And, you know, I remember I was at Sundance this year, and there was a lot of young filmmakers with their first, you know, short films or features, and they were like, oh, your films really inspired me to make films. And I was like, you know, that's a good thing, you know. And it was quite moving, that. It was like, wow, there's a lot of young women as well. And you're like, oh, that's cool, you know, that's a good thing. And sometimes you're in your little dark hole thinking, oh God, how am I going to make this work, you know? And that can be like something quite surprising and flattering, but also kind of, you know, it's good, this makes a difference, you know? If it's inspired anyone, that's only a good thing, you know? I'm happy with that, yeah.
I wondered what your thoughts were on the fact you've had your name emblazoned on one of the Girls on Top's T-shirts.
I think that's hilarious. I tried to give them to my family, and they're probably like, no way am I wearing that, you know. You know, I think it's funny. Personally, I like the Agnes Barda and the Isabel Huppert one. A friend of mine just stole the Isabel Huppert one, so I'm going to get a new one.
Have you worn your one? Would you do that?
I think that's a bit cheesy, but if I run out of clean clothes, I probably would, yeah.
Am I allowed to ask where you're going next? Are you busy in a new project?
I'm writing right now, like something original, but I don't really want to speak about what exactly it is yet, because I'm still finding that out myself, but I'm excited. I've nearly finished. It's 2 weeks to go. So I've had a lot of time, you know, the 6 months of travelling, and you know, you're sitting on planes and you're thinking, you know, like you're talking about something you've already done and you're trying to think about the next thing. So it can be a really weird kind of in-between time, you know. So I think as soon as I got all, I mean, literally I started writing in Italy, which was the last time I did press. And it was just really refreshing to just like start something anew rather than talk about something that exists, you know, that's in the world now. It's always a weird time, like it's sort of, you finish a film, you're like, ah, you know, that was that, you know, it's like being born and, you know, and it's just really good to get the process like from the beginning again, you know, although daunting. So yeah, I'm like, I just went, you know, straight into the next thing, you know, really, you know, it's a fantastic job, you know what I mean, as well. It's like, it's rough sometimes, but anything good is, you know, it's just hard and it's a lot of money to make films, so it can be a lot of obstacles, but I've worked with some really great people, and I think that's the key, is just work with great people, you know. You know, Derek Jarman came to film school when I was at film school, and he's like, I just work with my friends. Life's too short, you know. Pretty inspiring guy, and not one person said him. I think it was just before he died, you know what I mean? But I always remember Derek Jarman saying that, you know.
My name's Joe.
You got him.
What's going on?
The cops are involved.
Where is she?
It's okay, Joe.
A completely inspirational conversation. My thanks to Lynn Ramsey. You Were Never Really Here and her compelling back catalogue is there to be viewed via most streaming sites. I'm Ben Eshmade. Thanks for listening to this archive edition of Nothing Concrete, the Barbican podcast. It's here to inspire more people to discover and love the arts with weekly episodes of archive finds such as this and theme series. Subscribe to Nothing Concrete on Acast, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. And if you can, leave us a review to help us get the word out.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.